Good afternoon. I am Al Wall, the Administrative Law Judge, pursuant to temporary appointment designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings upon the request of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to serve as a hearing officer for this hearing. This is the hearing of the application of Otter Tail Corporation, doing business as Otter Tail Power Company and commonly referred to as Otter Tail or Otter Tail Power, for approval of the 2009 Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rider and an advanced determination of prudence for its 48-megawatt share in the Ashtabula Wind Energy Center. That's Public Service Commission case number PU-08-742, which is combined and consolidated with the hearing of Otter Tail's notice for change in rates for electric service filed pursuant to North Dakota Century Code Section 49-0505 and North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-09-02-01. That's Public Service Commission case number PU-08-862. Before proceeding with the hearings, I will ask the commissioners for comments and for any directions for the hearing. Commission President Kevin Kramer.
Thanks, Judge, and thank you, everyone, for being here. This particular hearing is, well, I guess somewhat peculiar in the sense that it's combining of two cases, although related, not as directly related as some cases when we combine them, but as you will recall, it was at the request of the interveners that the two cases were brought together, and without objection by the company or advocates, we're hearing two cases today. The other thing that's a bit peculiar, at least from my experience, is that these are quite old cases, and we don't generally hang on to cases this long or continue them quite this long. But again, once, as is sometimes the case, when negotiations are underway and a settlement seems to be pending, we continue the case. And so we are looking at a rate case that's just under a year old and a advanced determination of prudence and a rider that is just over a year old. Nonetheless, you know, it brings us to this point. And also, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, and there's always a chance I'm not, that it's somewhat unusual to have a formal hearing on a settlement. However, I think the timeline, to some degree, actually requires us this opportunity to get a more thorough, perhaps, review, reminder, at least, of the facts in the case. And so I appreciate everyone's willingness to go this route. And Judge, of course, you're the one that has to deal with the process, but I think it's an appropriate process given everything that's here. So I look forward to the day and another review of all of the facts.
Commissioner Tony Clark.
Just good afternoon and welcome. I, like Kevin, note that the settlement's been here for a while. Our cover sheet says it was filed in July, but we do have notice requirements and things like that, and we want to make sure that everyone, including and especially the public, has an ability to listen in and be here if they so choose. So thank you for your indulgence while we set that process in motion. I look forward to a good hearing today and learning a bit more about the settlement. Thank you.
Commissioner Brian Koch.
Just the same kind of thoughts. Just thank everyone for being here today. And I know Otter Tail put a lot of work into this. The large industrial group did, our own staff. And it's so important. I think everybody worked together. And I just appreciate the work you put into it. And also want to remind folks that I guess it's Otter Tail's 100th year of being in operation now. And I don't think Chuck was president back then, but I know he's been around there a while. So look forward to the testimony today.
Thank you, commissioners. The record will show that it is approximately 1:40 o'clock p.m., September 28, 2009. The time and the date noticed for the hearing of the application of Otter Tail for approval of the 2009 Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rider and an advanced determination of prudence for its share in the Ashtabula Wind Energy Center, case number PU-08-742, which is combined and consolidated with the hearing of its notice for change in rates for electric service, case number PU-08-862. All as I have previously recited and as is set forth in the notice of hearing, notice of continued hearing, and notice of public input session dated March 11, 2009, and the notice of continued consolidated hearing dated August 12, 2009. The Commission's notice of continued consolidated hearing specified the following issues to be considered and determined upon this hearing. One, what is the value of Otter Tail's property, used and useful, for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Two, what is Otter Tail's rate of return on its property, used and useful, for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Three, what is a just and reasonable rate of return on Otter Tail's property, used and useful, for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Four, what rates and charges are necessary to provide a just and reasonable rate of return on Otter Tail's property, used and useful, for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Five, are Otter Tail's proposed rate schedules designed in such a manner that they result in a basis of charge to its customers that is just and reasonable without discrimination? Six, is Otter Tail's investment in the Ashtabula Wind Energy Center prudent? Seven, should the Commission approve the 2009 Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rider as filed? Eight, should Otter Tail be permitted to recover any generation costs through a rider? Nine, any other relevant information or proposals concerning the proceedings? And 10, does the settlement provide a reasonable resolution of the issues? Mr. Gary Hartson, please state your appearance for the record and identify any associate counsel also appearing for Otter Tail.
Bruce Gerhardson, I am Associate General Counsel for Otter Tail Power Company. I am the only counsel present today. I should mention we have several representatives of Otter Tail, of course, in presence.
Mr. Cicci, please state your appearance, and you may proceed with your presentation and motion.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Joe Cicci. I'm Associate Attorney in this case, representing the large industrial group. Pursuant to Rule 3A3, of the admission to practice rules, Rich Savicole has made application to appear pro hoc vice. That application has been granted, and my purpose here is to move his appearance before this group and before you, Your Honor.
The motion is granted.
I also move that I be excused from the remainder of the proceedings.
There any objection? Hearing none, the motion is granted.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cicci.
And
Mr. Savicole, will you state your appearance for the record, please?
My name is Richard Savicole with the Fellhaber Law Firm. I represent the large industrial group in this case. The large industrial group is comprised of Cargill Incorporated, Tharaldson Ethanol Plant 1, Goodrich Corporation, Bobcat Corporation, Primewood Inc., Cavendish Farms, Inc., Archer Daniels Midland Company, and Comdell Innovation. And with me today I have LIG's experts, Larry Shadeen and Kavita Manning.
Ms. Bendish, please state your appearance for the record and identify Commission staff who will be participating with you for the hearing.
Annette Bendish, Counsel for Advocacy Staff. Next to me is Mike Diller, and also present is Jerry Lynn, who are an advocacy staff for the Commission.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, please state your appearance for the record and identify any Commission staff who will be participating with you for the hearing.
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, General Counsel with the Commission as Commission Advisor, and also with me is Patrick Vaughn, Director of Compliance and Competitive Markets.
Is there anyone present other than those who will testify on behalf of Otter Tail or the large industrial group who would offer any evidence or otherwise comment concerning the applications which are the subject of this hearing? If not, before proceeding with opening statements, we have two housekeeping matters to attend to for these proceedings. First, I note the order of the Commission in case number PU-08-742, granting trade secret protection for certain filings, and further note that filings of the same information have been subsequently made in case number PU-08-862. All filings in case number PU-08-862 containing the information for which the Commission granted trade secret protection for filings in case number PU-08-742 shall be deemed to have trade secret protection for case number PU-08-862 and for all proceedings had for this hearing. Second, the record for case number PU-08-742 and case number PU-08-862 refers to these cases as combined and as consolidated and have been treated by the parties and the Commission as consolidated hearings. There has not been, however, any order for consolidation of these cases. Pursuant to North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-02-04-04 or 98-02-02-12. Nonetheless, these cases shall be consolidated for hearing today upon the parties' stipulation that all evidence received for the hearing shall be deemed received for both cases unless evidence is specifically offered and received for a particular case. Is it so stipulated, Mr. Gerhardsen?
It is.
Mr. Savakul?
Yes, Your Honor.
Ms. Bendish?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Yes.
Counsel, is there any other matter to be considered preliminary to the hearing? If not, Mr. Gerhardsen, you may proceed with your opening statement.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chair Kramer, commissioners, members of the public, maybe what I'll begin with is just to mention that the commission staff has posted on its website a PowerPoint presentation, and that will be the what I use to make my opening statement. Once I'm done with that, we will call Mr. Tom Browse, who will under oath basically walk through some of the same material. He'll be our primary witness in support of our application, and together with the pre-filed direct testimony will support our application. We do have a number of our witnesses present here today who are available for questions, and they are, in many cases, the subject matter experts, and we would like, if questions are asked of them, that we think they're the best people to answer them rather than you getting it from me. With that, I guess I'll turn to my PowerPoint presentation, and if I can run this machine. That sounded like I didn't know what I was doing. Let's see. There we go. Is that right? Because we have so many representatives of Otter Tail here, and unless it's necessary, I won't introduce them all at this time. As we call them, I'm certainly think it may be more appropriate to call them and identify them at that time. As I mentioned in this presentation, I will cover primarily three things. The first being the nature of our request, that is our application. I'll also cover a summary or summarize the proceedings that led up to settlement, including the settlement discussions that we had. And then finally, and most substantially, I will cover the summary of our settlement itself. That'll include a discussion of our base rates revenue requirement and rate design, that is the rate case itself, and then the renewable resource rider terms and conditions. We filed our application on November 3rd, 2008. We had identified in that application an overall revenue deficiency of 5.14%, which translates into a little over $6 million. That is then, that revenue deficiency is what our increase request was overall. Our identified revenue deficiency was based on an historical test year that ended December 31, 2007, with known and measurable changes. I'll point out that Otter Tail's last rate case was in 1982. It concluded in 1983, and that was 26 years ago. And that puts, I think, our 5% increase into perspective. If you were to take a proportional amount of that 5% and spread it over that time period, it would amount to just about 0.2% per year. So over that period, a very low rate of inflation on the price of service from Otter Tail Power Company. The reasons for the increase, because of that long duration, aren't too surprising. Over that period, we've seen increases in costs in most of the areas of most of the cost areas we do business. Of course, materials, labor, pension, medical costs have increased dramatically since that last rate increase. Also, our rates have been structured in the past in a way that didn't allow us to recover fully our fuel and purchase power costs. And so there was a deficiency that was attributable to that fact. And then finally, we've made substantial investments in that time frame, those 26 years. We added a combustion turbine at Solway, Minnesota. We've added a diesel generator at our system operations center, several transmission additions. You may be aware of siting proceedings that we've had in front of you for Underwood to Harvey and Harvey to Rugby, 230 kilovolt transmission lines here in North Dakota. We've had production improvement investments at our power plants, including Big Stone, Hoot Lake, and Coyote. Now, I should also point out our application covers many of the reasons we haven't had to increase rates, even though we've had these increase in operating costs and increases in our investments. We've aggressively pursued cost savings through operational efficiency measures. We've been able to reduce the number of staff that we have, we've been able to do that also without sacrificing reliability or customer satisfaction. Our application consists of the testimony of 9 witnesses and our application itself, supporting schedules and work papers. I'll enter those into evidence when Mr. Brouse takes the stand, but I should point out there are 6 volumes to that application. It's a very extensive document. The interveners and staff conducted an extensive discovery over the course of these proceedings. I think we count 499 written information requests that were submitted by interveners and staff. Each of those 499, or many of those 409 information requests, had several parts. So the number of actual questions asked of our company, and for which we had to supply a written response, exceeded 500 by quite a bit. The interveners and staff, based upon what they reviewed in our application and the discovery, they filed testimony of 4 of their own witnesses. After the testimony was filed and we understood each other's positions, we began settlement discussions, and those were conducted over several weeks. The bottom line of the settlement, and for those following along, I'm on slide 6 of the presentation. This is really the result of the settlement. The net increase of the settlement amounts to just over 3%, a 3% increase. And that's, to remind you, compared to we applied for a 5.14%. And that translates into $3.6 million increase compared to a little over $6 million originally requested. The reductions from the original request primarily relate to the following things. A reduction of the allowed rate of return and the allowed return on equity. The asset-based margin credit, which I'll discuss in a minute. Asset-based margins are the margins that Otter Tail earns when it sells in the wholesale market energy produced off of generating plants that it owns. And because the settlement involved moving that credit from a base rate fixed credit to a variable credit through the fuel clause, that reduces the original request. There's also a fixed credit to base rates for non-asset-based margins, and non-asset-based margins are those margins we earn from wholesale transactions that don't involve our own generating plants, where we have purchases and sales that don't involve Otter Tail own generation. We also had an adjustment that involved moving the MISO Schedule and 16-7 charges to the fuel clause adjustment, and we removed demand-side management and energy conservation costs from the case. We had numerous other miscellaneous adjustments to both rate base and operating expenses. And then we also had the renewable generation costs remaining in the rider. And that is actually, I think, how we originally filed the case. But those adjustments all result in the reductions that you see up at the top of that slide. Now, to give you a little more detail on some of those things, asset-based margins. Again, this is margins earned on wholesale transactions from our generating plants. The treatment that has been settled on is an 85% credit to the fuel clause adjustment, 15% retained by the company. And this is the same treatment as the commission approved for Xcel Energy. The benefits of this approach is that it lowers fuel clause costs on customer bills. It also provides an incentive for Otter Tail to optimize the operation of its low-cost power plants. That's the 15%. And then finally, one thing we recognized is that there's a benefit in that this credit will increase and decrease along with purchase power costs. And that means that customers will get the most credit when their fuel costs are highest. So it'll get the most bang for the buck when customers need it the most. The implementation that we have settled on includes a forecasting of the margins and then truing up of the forecast when the actual amounts are known. These are relatively short periods over which we're going to be doing truing up. And then the non-asset-based margins, again, these are the wholesale transactions that don't involve our generation plants. We've used a fixed credit to base rates. This is not a different approach so much as a different amount, that there was a negotiated amount that was based on a cost study that was done to arrive at a fixed credit to base rates. Now, I should have mentioned that if folks have questions, I wouldn't want to say that a question wouldn't be appropriate here as I'm walking through this. But again, when Mr. Brouse takes the stand, you will get under oath responses to questions. If questions are asked now, maybe they could be followed up with Mr. Brouse, or we could answer those at that time. Moving on to rate design for the case. In our original proposal, we had the all rates included an elimination of declining block rates. And declining block rates, just as a reminder, are those rates that get lower as a customer consumes more. It was the thought of the company, and certainly it's the thought in the industry right now, that conservation should be encouraged. And in some ways, there are those who would advocate against declining block rates as not supportive of conservation. We also moved to add the fuel clause adjustment to all rates, and I mentioned that earlier in the presentation. And then we made a change to the way we do seasonal pricing. We had a fair amount of discussion on several specific rate schedules. One that I didn't put in the slide, and I should have, was our residential, our standard firm service residential. We had a fair amount of discussion on that. There is the reintroduction of some amount of declining block into that rate in order to moderate the rate impacts the customers would feel from the rate change. The same is true for residential demand control, farm service, general service, the smaller general service, and the larger general service. There were also changes maybe to all of those rates for purposes of we had both a facilities and a customer charge as separate charges, and those have been combined into a single charge rather than having them separated. There were other changes as well, but that's a highlight. We had a few changes that involved canceling existing rate schedules. First of all, we had the commercial demand control. That rate has been an Otter Tail rate for over 20 years, but it's always been experimental in nature. We have a total of 26 customers on that rate. There has been no update to that rate in the 20 years, I think, since it's been initiated. We note that this low participation has made it less effective than it was hoped. What we did is we evaluated the impact of migrating customers from that rate. It appears that those same customers may benefit from moving to a commercial time of use rate. The evaluation that we've done in our settlement documents really reflects if they were to move to a general service rate rather than one of these alternatives. I'll move on to the next slide here, the general service electric climate control. This is a rate that has been closed by commission order to new customers since 1983. It is being canceled now due to administrative complexities, and those affect both the customer and the company. And if I can explain how these rates work, maybe that would be helpful. These rates require the company to keep really an inventory of the kinds of electric equipment the customer has on their side of the meter. And it really is not a very feasible thing to administer. And as I understand it, that was the reason it was closed in 1983. And we would have expected a fair amount of attrition, and I don't know how many customers were on this in 1983, but there is a need to move this rate, because if we had retained it, we would have seen a substantial increase for these customers, both in the nature of the way the rate is designed, but also to capture the extensive administrative costs in managing the rate. Again, there are other rate options that may be available to some of these customers. We have managed, we have monitored, and the settlement document reflects if they were to migrate just to a general service rate. And then there's one last cancellation. That is our large general service off-peak rider. It's a variant of our large general service time of day rate. Because this is duplicative of another rate that we have available, it was not seen as necessary to meet our policy objectives. There's only two customers on the rate as well. The increase that these customers will receive is very low, less than 1%. So the impact to these two customers does not appear to be great. Now, I should mention that the company will take steps to notify all the customers that are affected by these rate cancellations, because they will see some rates that are new to them. We will be sending them each a letter, and they will be notified of other rates for which they may qualify, and they will be notified of how to contact their customer service representative so that they can evaluate their best options. And of course, these are going to be things that are case by case specific, and so they will need to work with their customer service representatives. Now I'll turn for a moment to the renewable resource cost recovery rider. The parties have agreed in the settlement that Otter Tail's investment in the Ashtabula Wind Energy Center is prudent, and that is pursuant to North Coast statute. We've also agreed that the 2009 renewable resource cost recovery rider should be approved as it was filed. And we've agreed that the Ashtabula and Langdon investments should remain in the rider. Now, we should probably point out that the case did not include the Laverne project because it was not completed at the time the case was filed. And we do anticipate making an additional filing by the end of the year for purposes of the Laverne project. The new renewable resource rate will reflect the return on equity that was settled in the case at 10.75%. And we will recover some unrecovered costs from 2008 over a 48-month period beginning January 1st of 2010. That will help smooth a bit the recovery of some of the costs that occurred because of the delay of the implementation of a rider in 2008. It'll also reflect removal of the partial levelizing of the production tax credit that Otter Tail had proposed in the case, and it will pass through the tax benefits of the projects as they are received. And then finally, the rider adjustment by settlement. It has been agreed that the rider adjustment should be included with the energy adjustment on customer bills. This has been a matter of discussion with the commission in the past as to which is the least confusing for customers, and we think this is the least confusing method of reflecting these costs on bills. Customer notification of final rates. We will include, this is, I think, pursuant to rule more than it is our settlement agreement, but we will be including with the first bills rendered containing final rates. We will include that notice, the statutory notice. We will update our rate brochures for residential, farm, and commercial customers. It's my recollection that this is an annual requirement, and we're proposing that we can do this in a single notice so that they're not receiving their annual notice of rates at the same time they're, or very close in time to the time they're receiving a notice about the change in rates from the rate case. We think by making these notices in one mailing, that it'll again reduce customer confusion from two mailings. We will also include language regarding the renewable resource cost recovery rider. We have agreed to address in future cases the following four things. The allocation of renewable energy credits among jurisdictions. Renewable energy credits are those things that are that recognize the renewable attribute of generation that comes from a renewable resource as defined by statute. The MRET system, I think, is what we're using in all our jurisdictions to monitor that. And there are instances, well, all of our states have a renewable energy objective or standard, and we are talking with others in the industry about how to allocate the value that's created by those as we bank them. We've also agreed to address a complete separation of energy costs from base rates on customer bills. You may recall that our base rates include a portion that is energy costs, and then our fuel clause currently works kind of to do an over and under. So the coming out of a rate case, that's typically a very small amount of a customer's bill. But it's an agreement that we should take all of the energy costs out of the base rates and reflect them separately on a customer's bill. We've agreed that we should use an E8760 or E8760 allocator for class allocations and fuel cost allocations in our next rate case. And we've agreed that we should include the wind project investments in base rates in our next filing as well. Now, my next slide says questions, but it may be more appropriate to put off those questions for our witnesses.
Please. Mr. Savicola and Ms. Bendish, I'm assuming that you will each reserve your opening statements for your presentations. We didn't talk about that in the pre-hearing conference, but I'm assuming my assumption is correct.
Yes, correct.
All right. Mr. Gerhardsen, you may proceed then with your witness.
I will call Mr. Tom Brouse.
Mr. Brouse, you may wish to take the witness stand, please. Be seated. Mr. Brouse, as you are doubtless well aware, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In other words, generally speaking, a lie. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. You raise your right hand, please. Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Brouse, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Mr. Gerhardsen. Is your mic on, Mr. Brouse? Is it? Very good. All right.
Mr. Brouse, can you tell the commission what you do at Otter Tail.
I'm the vice president of administration, and with that I have the regulatory group, policy and compliance, the IT and telecommunications area, and also the market planning.
Mr. Browse, I've got a rather large exhibit here. I'm showing you what's been marked for identification as Exhibit 1. It is several volumes, six volumes. And if I may, just for the record, clarify that while there are six volumes, there's a Volume 1, a Volume 2A, and a 2B, a 3, and a 4A, and a 4B. It could be confusing, I guess. Can you identify what that is?
The application for authority to increase electric rates.
I move admission of the application.
Mr. Savickle.
No objection, Your Honor.
Ms. Bendish.
No objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
No objection.
Exhibit 1 is received.
Mr. Browse, can you generally describe Otter Tail's service territory and the communities that Otter Tail serves?
Yes, we serve 50,000 square miles, and it covers northwestern Minnesota, the eastern portion of North Dakota, and the northeastern portion of South Dakota. It is mostly small towns, 423 small towns in North Dakota. Average size of the towns is 400 people, and over half of those towns have fewer than 200 people in, so pretty rural. Only three towns have populations of over 10,000, and they, of course, Jamestown, North Dakota, and then Fergus Falls and Bemidji in Minnesota.
Did you mention how many customers Otter Tail has in that service?
I didn't, but about 129,000.
And how many of those are in North Dakota?
About 57,000.
In your pre-filed testimony that is part of the application, Exhibit 1, you mentioned that Otter Tail Power Company and Otter Tail Corporation were in the process of reorganizing as a holding company. Is that reorganization now complete?
Yes, it is, as of July 1st, 2009.
Did that reorganization change Otter Tail Power Company's operations in any way?
Not the operations, just a change in the legal structure. And what happened is a new corporate entity was created for the corporate group. The existing legal entity became Otter Tail Power Company again, and now we're a legal subsidiary of Otter Tail Corporation.
Also, in your pre-filed testimony, you mentioned that Otter Tail is participating in the Big Stone 2 project. Is Otter Tail still participating in that project?
No, we're not.
Are any costs relating to the Big Stone 2 project included in the rate increase that is under consideration today?
No, it's not. We looked and we're not doing any of the long-term construction work in progress, so there's no inclusion in this rate case at all.
Now, Mr. Browse, I'm showing you what's been marked for identification as Exhibit 2. Can you identify what that is?
That's a settlement agreement.
Does it also include a letter, filing letter by Ms. Matt Bendish?
Yes, it does.
Offer Exhibit 2.
Mr. Savickle.
No objection, Your Honor.
Ms. Bendish.
No objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
No objection.
Exhibit 2 is received.
Mr. Browse, I want to cover, first of all, I should have mentioned this before. Is this your signature on Exhibit 2?
Yes, it is.
And do you have authority for Otter Tail to enter into settlements such as this?
Yes, I do.
There's a few changes that I would like to walk through with you that have been made. First of all, I'll note that there's a few initial changes in the Exhibit 2. The first one
is on page 4, and that has been initialed by all parties. Can you just generally state the nature of that change?
It had to do with an erroneous number for the rate base that was used.
Secondly, just for the record to make sure that it's clear on these, there's one on page 7. Can you state the nature of that change?
It had to do with the case number that was applied to the DSM and energy efficiency.
And then finally, there are changes, first on page 10 and then on page 11, which it may be more appropriate that some of our other subject matters experts describe, but do you know the general nature of those two changes?
Yes, has to do with comparing the old rate with the rate after the rate case is approved.
Of those specific rates, the farm service rate?
Correct.
And the residential domain control rate?
Correct.
Now, also known in the settlement that there were several items that suggested the parties would implement final rates by September 1. Since that date has passed, and it may be several days before the commission enters a final order on the settlement, do you agree that certain terms in the agreement should be read to accommodate the actual date that final rates are implemented?
Yes.
And maybe I should walk through them real quickly. Maybe I'll walk through the settlement really quickly just to cover which areas this will affect. If you look at the section, I think it's on pages 4 to 8 of the settlement agreement that reference base rates and revenue requirements, is there any change that needs to be considered there relative to the different implementation date?
None in that section.
How about in the next section described on page, or reflected on page 8 of the settlement agreement, of issues that need to be addressed in future rate cases?
No, none there either.
And then on pages 9 through 13 regarding allocations or rate design?
No.
And then finally we're getting to, there's a discussion on the application of interim rates and the interim rate refund on page 13 of the agreement, and it references attachment C. Do you know if changes would need to be made because of the later implementation?
Yes, we were assuming that final rates would be put in on September 1st, so we would have interim rates through August 31, so we'll need to adjust for those.
And then finally, there's a discussion, a section regarding the fuel clause adjustment on pages 13 and 14 of the settlement agreement. Any changes that are required there?
No.
And then finally, the discussion of the renewable resource rider described on pages 14 and 15 of the agreement. Are there any adjustments that would need to be made there because of the later implementation?
Yes, there are. The renewable resource cost recovery rider should be approved as filed, but it was the rate was to be effective for bills rendered on and after September 1st, 2009. However, that'll change slightly due to the later date of implementation. Otter Tail had filed a letter in this case to indicate the 2010 annual rider filing will be made on December 31st of 2009 instead of September 1st, 2009. And then an implementation for that rider would be on April 1st, 2010 instead of January 1st, 2010.
And I'm showing you what's been marked as Exhibit 3?
Correct.
Is that letter?
Yes, it is.
I offer Exhibit 3.
Mr. Savico?
No objection.
Ms. Bendish?
No objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Seiko?
No objection.
Exhibit 3 is received.
I'm going to refer back to one additional section of the settlement agreement. It's the terms and conditions section, pages 16 and 17. There's a reference there, I think, to implementation as of September 1. Is that another reference that needs to be modified slightly to accommodate the different implementation date?
Yes, it is. We agree that the effective date should be set by the commission's final order on this.
Now, does Ottertail have a preference for the effective date, taking into consideration where we are in the calendar year?
Yes. The main thing is that it'd be effective the first day of a calendar month. It just makes it a lot easier to put into effect the overall ease of implementation, which in turn then keeps costs down. And since we're nearly at the end of September, we think November 1st would be a reasonable time frame. Would give the commission time to have a final order and allow us time to get the implementation of the final rates.
And then were you here for my opening presentation and PowerPoint?
Yes, I was.
I'm going to show you what's been marked for identification as Exhibit 4. Is that that presentation?
Yes, it is.
I offer Exhibit 4.
Mr. Savickle?
No objection, Your Honor.
And Ms. Bendish?
No objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No objection.
Exhibit 4 is received.
Mr. Brouse, did that presentation fairly summarize Ottertail's original request, the proceedings and settlement discussions that led to settlement, and the settlement agreement that was eventually reached?
Yes, it does.
Now, for the record, I'm going to walk through a few things that are issues that are actually were noticed for the case, just to be clear on the record as to your agreement with respect to the resolution of those issues. We had mentioned the change, that small change to the number. I'm sorry, I'll put it in front of you. Page 4 of the settlement agreement, which is Exhibit 2, and there was a slight change to the number $187,360,150. Do you agree that that is the value of Ottertail's Ottertail's property that's used and useful for service and convenience of the public in North Dakota?
Yes.
Do you agree that Ottertail's return on equity in this case should be 10.75%, and that represents a just and reasonable return on equity for Ottertail's property that is used and useful for the service of and convenience of the public in North Dakota?
Yes.
Do you believe that the increase in Ottertail's base electric rates for retail customers in North Dakota that are represented in the settlement agreement and ultimately yield an annual net retail sales and miscellaneous revenue increase of $3,597,887, or roughly 3.04%, do you agree that that results in rates and charges that are necessary to provide a just and reasonable rate of return on Ottertail's property that is used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Long question.
Yes, I do.
So I had to get the notice language in there. Do you agree that the rate schedules that have been agreed upon reflect rate designs that would result in a basis of charge to Ottertail's customers that is just and reasonable and without discrimination?
Yes.
And do you agree that Ottertail's investment in the Ashtabula Wind Project has been prudent?
Yes.
Do you agree the Commission should approve the 2009 Renewable Cost Recovery Rider and the ongoing adjustments to the Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rider as are described in the settlement agreement?
Yes.
And do you agree that the existing renewable investments that are being recovered through Ottertail's Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rider should be continue to be recovered through that rider as described in the settlement agreement, at least until Ottertail's next rate case?
Yes, I do.
Do you request that the Commission approve the settlement agreement as you have described and as is contained in Exhibit 2?
Yes.
I have no questions at this time.
Questions, Mr. Savickle?
None, Your Honor.
Ms. Bendish?
None, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
Thanks. Page 12 of the settlement. You're discussing a new provision to the, at the bottom, a new provision to your tariff concerning customers signing a confidentiality agreement in order to receive forecasts for fuel adjustments and rider adjustments. Are any of those currently filed as a matter of course or with a fuel adjustment filing with the commission?
I'm going to have to refer, I think, to Ron. I'm not aware if we have any in North Dakota.
We can bring him up to the stand then later, or perhaps Mike will know when he's on the stand. Okay, thank you.
Questions from the commission? Commissioner Clark?
Tom, would you be the right witness to talk about the asset-based margins issue?
I can speak to that, depending on how deep you get.
Sure. Could you discuss a little bit about how this will work? I understand it's an 85% split credited to customers in the FCA, 15% retained by Otter Tail. It's the implementation that I think I probably have the most questions about. It says it includes forecasted margins and then a true up for the forecast when actual amounts known. So in base rates, is there a given amount that is assumed for off system for asset based margins?
Yes, there is. From what we originally filed, we were asking for a revenue requirement, and 15% of that is currently still a revenue requirement.
Okay. Do you know what that amount is?
See some activity out here, so I might have to get corrected. But
okay.
The difference in the amount we requested and the amount we're expecting to run through the fuel clause was in the neighborhood of $600,000.
You know, might I just recommend that we hold off? Mr. Bython can take the stand, and he understands the inner workings of these two things. I think the details of them, and would be able to provide a more thorough answer.
Sure, and I'll have some questions about the true-up mechanism at that time.
Yeah, that
those would need to go to Pete as well.
Great, okay. And then rate design, we should hold off on?
Not the guy.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Any further? Commissioner Kramer?
Well, and maybe Pete might be the right person on this too, but my question was on the non-asset-based the wholesale margin agreement, the $560,000 fixed credit, based on making sure that that's obviously greater than the incremental cost. But was there ever discussion about bifurcating those two, or separating the non-asset based margins completely from the case and creating a completely separate entity as opposed to sharing either risk or reward?
Yes, there was some discussion on that. One of the issues we have is we're basically using the same folks.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were to do that, we would lose some of that efficiency. So how this number came up with, which Bruce mentioned in the presentation, was we actually did a time study, had that group write down for a period of time whether they were working on the regulated or unregulated, and then based on the cost of that time study, came up with this number.
All right, I have nothing else.
Any further questions from the commission? Commissioner Kalk?
Please, on slide 10, you talked about there was, of the presentation, you talked about a rate that had closed a new customer since 1983, 527 customers. I'm just trying to get an example of what kind of customers you're talking about. you gave me the different usage, but just a practical, you know, is it a big farm? Is it, who are we talking about here?
Again, I'll turn that over to, I don't know if that'd be probably Dave Brozak.
Okay. And then the only other question, or more of a comment, I guess, is I appreciate your including the Big Stone 2 into your comments because I have a lot of questions about Big Stone 2 that perhaps we could get Otter Tail to come back at some point in time and give us a laydown of what how that's going to affect what we're doing from here forward.
Sure. Absolutely.
Any further questions from the commission? Commissioner Clark.
On page 7 of the settlement, there's discussion about economic development costs. Those were reduced by $50,000 in the proposed settlement. Could you give me a little bit of background on the discussion regarding economic development costs and whether they should be considered reasonable and prudent at all and why the $50,000 reduction?
Okay, well, first I should maybe just clarify the $50,000 reduction. Since 1989, Otter Tail has been committed to spending, I think by order, about $315,000. And in our request, in the filing, we requested to increase that to $500,000, and that was reduced to $450,000, so it's still a higher number than what by order we were in the past.
Could you give me, remind me the order again? I know we have meetings on it every so often, but what was that a result of, and how was that number arrived at? Do you know?
Again, it was before I was involved, so it can either go through Bernadine here or have her come up.
Okay. Thanks.
Commissioner Clark was studying economics in grade school in 1983.
Any further questions from the commission?
You know, I would on that same topic, that along that same line, and again, maybe Bernadine or somebody can speak to it, but how do you measure the value to the ratepayer of the economic development program?
Comments I can make, and maybe Bernadine can add to it, but I know we bring, recently it's been Don Fry in to talk with you guys, and they do have a method of how many jobs created, how many jobs saved. So I think you can put some value on that. Beyond that, it's a relatively soft science.
Okay.
Any further questions from the commission? Follow up, Mr. Gerhardsen.
Just one item for clarification. You'd mentioned the order saying $317,000 for economic development. Do you know what Otter Tail spent in the recent past on economic development? Is it that amount or some other amount?
It's definitely higher. I think it's more in the range of $450,000, the average over the last few years.
That's nothing further.
Any follow up, Mr. Savickel?
None, Your Honor.
Ms. Bendish?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeff Gotsacko?
No.
Any further questions from the Commissioner,
you know,
Kramer?
Along the same lines, and maybe, you know, maybe this is a topic for, you know, post rate case. But by any chance, have any of the large industrial group members been recipients of any economic development investment? When I say the large industrial group folks that are represented, that are intervened in this case,
I would be guessing. I think there is some, but I wouldn't be able to give you the example, so we can figure that out.
Any further questions from the commission? Follow up, Mr. Gerhardsen.
No more follow up.
Anything further, Mr. Sebico?
None, Your Honor.
Ms. Bendish?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeff Gotsacko?
No.
All right. Your next witness, Mr. Gerhardsen.
If I may, Your Honor, most of the, I'm going to call three witnesses each, really just to address questions that were posed during the testimony of Mr. Browse. I will start with Mr. Bython.
Mr. Bython, as you are doubtless well aware, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In other words, generally speaking, a lie. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. Will you raise your right hand, please? Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Bython, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Mr. Gerhardsen.
Before I begin, can you just describe your position with Otter Tail? Give us your title and maybe a bit of what you do.
I'm the manager of regulatory economics. I generally oversee the revenue requirements calculations, rate design, and fuel cost calculations.
Do you have an education background in that area of expertise?
My education was at the University of North Dakota with a major in accounting.
Do you maintain any professional certifications?
I'm an inactive CPA, and I'm also a certified management accountant.
Maybe I'll just ask you a background question to get the discussion started. There were questions of Mr. Brous on asset-based margins. Could you describe how the settlement credit for asset-based margin works and whether there's any, and if so, how much in base rates versus fuel clause?
The credits for asset-based margins have been moved to the fuel clause 100%. There isn't any left in the base rates. So anything that any of the margins that are there would flow through the fuel clause mechanism and not through the base rate mechanism. The I don't know if you want me to continue any further with that discussion, but
if there's anything else helpful to a basic understanding of how that crediting
works. From an implementation standpoint, on a monthly basis, we'll forecast the margins for that month, and the company will retain 15% of that, and it'll flow through the fuel clause on a monthly basis. And because it's a forecast, we have to look backwards and say, did we achieve that forecast, either under or over? And then in a following month, we'll have a true-up that flows also through the fuel clause.
Was the basic purpose of this forecast and truing up procedure in order to give relative immediacy to the recognition of margins that are expected in any given month?
Is that That's correct.
I have no more questions for Mr. Bifon.
Questions, Mr. Zarasevico?
Your Honor.
Ms. Bendish?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
If you're the correct witness, my question about page 12 of the settlement and the proposed tariff provision to receive the forecast for the fuel and the rider adjustments, fuel clause and rider adjustments.
Yes, I'd be the correct witness.
I just wanted to know if those filings or those kinds of forecasts are normally filed with your adjustments. And I don't mean in response to a data request, but I mean in the normal course of business with the commission.
The type of forecast referenced here is a forecast, actually a fuel cost we're talking, which is a little bit different than forecasting a rate going forward. We do rates on a regular basis periodically, maybe every quarter or so. That we do supply to customers upon request, but that's not something that's filed with the monthly FCAs. So neither that nor the fuel costs. And the reason for the confidentiality agreement is those fuel costs, when you get to that level, we feel are need to be confidential.
And I do recognize that. I just wanted to be sure it wasn't something that we normally receive here, which would be an open record.
Correct.
Correct. Thank you.
Questions for the commission? Commissioner Clark.
I think he answered my question on the asset-based margins. I think some of the confusion that perhaps I had, and I don't know about the rest of the commission, but as you may know, with MDU, we have a little bit different arrangement. And the rationale for my questions, and I think what threw me for a bit of a loop, is this idea of including forecasted margins and then a true-up. In that case, there is an annual assumed revenue from off-system sales that are built into base rates, and then the true-up in that case refers to if the utility doesn't meet its mark, they have an opportunity to recover some of those costs to bring it up to what the assumed revenue would be. But that's not what we're talking about here.
That isn't the mechanism we're using here. No.
Okay, here it's strictly an FCA. There's not a built-in assumption. Rather, it's 85%.
Well, whatever amount happens to flow through in the given month.
Okay, and the forecast is simply a month-to-month forecast.
Correct.
Of what the off-system sales will be. Yeah,
Commissioner, correct.
Okay, thank you. That's all the questions I have.
Any further questions from the commission? Follow-up, Mr. Gerhardsen?
No follow-up,
Your Honor. Mr. Savickle?
None, Your Honor.
Ms. Bendish?
None, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No.
Thank you very much.
Judge, if I would, is this the best witness to ask the question I had about the 527 members who have the different rate schedule?
I think that actually Mr. Prozek would be
okay.
Preferable, and I'll call
all
him.
Right.
Thank you. Your next witness, Mr. Gerhardsen.
Mr. Dave Prozek.
Mr. Prozek, your testimony is required to be under oath. I am required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In other words, generally speaking, a lie. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. You raise your right hand, please. Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Prozek, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Mr. Gerhardsen.
Before I begin, can you tell us your job description, not your job description, pardon me, your job title, and describe briefly what you do at Audit?
My job title is the supervisor of pricing, work in the regulatory services, report to Mr. P. Python. And generally, I work on rate design and any other special pricing contracts for our customers.
Can you give briefly your educational background and any professional certifications that you hold?
Sure. I graduated with an energy management degree at Morehead State, and I'm currently seeking a master's in public administration.
I'm going to turn your attention to what was slide 10 of my presentation, and it was offered as exhibit 4. For your convenience, I've put it back on the screen in the back of the room here. This has to do with our general service electric climate control rate that's being closed. That is the question. That is the rate, I mean, that we were going to ask questions about. And actually, maybe what I could do, I don't so much have a question. It's just to really set you up as a witness so that Commissioner Kalk may ask his question. How about that?
Any question, Mr. Savickle?
None, Your Honor.
Ms. Bendish?
No, Your Honor.
Jeff Coatsack. All right, Commissioner Kalk.
A lot of setup for the question. I'm just trying to get two things, I guess, is an example of the kind of customer that we're talking about here, other than just the size of power. And would the general rate increase that you've given us apply the same to these customers, since this is such an old rate that's been on the books?
I'll try to answer your question in a couple of steps here, but I do not have certified list of the types of customers, but generally they're going to be small to medium type customers, maybe some restaurants. So that's generally kind of the types of customers that we're dealing with.
So would the rate increase that you give us as a whole, does that apply the same? I guess what I just want to see is that there's one group that all of a sudden they've had this rate that's been in the books for a long time. We do this new rate design, all of a sudden they get hit a lot more than anybody else, which is kind of my thought why the large industrial group came in, because there was a rate that hit them really hard, so they intervened. And we've not heard from, to my knowledge, of any of these 527 customers, and trying to get a feel for what their new fee will be on this is really what I'm driving at.
Right. If I could, I think I have a copy of the settlement agreement, and I'm going to turn to a section in there that I believe kind of describes the increases that we're talking about for these customers. If you bear with me for a moment while I find that page. Okay, I think it covers two pages here. I'm on page 18, and this is
referring to exhibit 2 for the record.
Thank you. would be the memorandum in support of settlement.
That is not.
See,
yeah, that's not.
Is that part of the application?
Correct. It's actually an exhibit that Mr. Diller, I think, would have anticipated Mr. Diller Ms. Bendish offered to Mr. Diller.
Well, why don't you
I can
put it in now?
Sure.
That's fine.
Do we have a copy?
The judges have a copy, yes.
Yes, then.
Identify an offer.
Yep. I'll do the brief foundation here. I'm showing you what's been marked for identification as Exhibit 5. Is that the memorandum in support of settlement agreement that you're referring to a moment ago?
Yes, it is.
And
Mr. Savickle?
No
objection. Ms. Bendish?
No objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle? Exhibit 5 is received.
You were referring, I think, to page 18 of that?
Yes. On page 18, it provides kind of a summary of the settlement, and it talks about the different types of customers. We can break those customers down into different demand levels. There's a group that is under 20 kW, and there's a group greater than 20 kW. For those customers, that would fall what we would call under the KW replacement. There's about 169 customers on that. And those customers, what we did was we took those customers and we took their previous year's usage and ran that on the new rate. And we calculated on average a 7.71% increase in rates for those customers. That's at the bottom of page 18. Okay? Then the majority of the customers, there's 358 of those customers who would then qualify for this greater than 20 kW rate that we propose, would receive an average of 20.5%. Now, I think what your question is getting at is our overall rate increase is much lower than that. And what I wanted to point out was this analysis is done based on those customers that had different adjustments to their bill depending on the different end uses. And now they're compared to what we would call like a firm rate. There's no control on that rate. It wouldn't be interrupted. But the customers do have options to go to a different rate that we're offering. For example, there's a commercial time of use rate where they might use more of their heating load in the off-peak versus the on-peak. In that case, they would see a reduction. They wouldn't necessarily see this 20% that we're talking about. So the main point here is that on our rates that we're asking to be eliminated, we have a place for them, options for them to go to. So that's the starting point. And if they want to see any other savings, that they could go to these other rates. And again, I think we talked about it earlier, those customers would meet with our energy management representatives to work out what would be best for them.
Any further questions from the commission? Follow up, Mr. Gerhardsen.
I do have actually one item of follow up on that. I just want to be clear, and you may have said this, and if I'm repetitive, I apologize. So when we're talking about the kind of increase that you were talking about in the memorandum, if these rates weren't canceled, if this rate were to continue as is, do you have an opinion as to what kind of a rate increase these customers would have seen? Would they have seen the 3% overall increase that we were looking at for the total rate case? Would they have seen the 20%? Would they have seen something in the middle?
Not looking at it real closely, I'm fairly comfortable that they would see something similar to what we stated here, and perhaps more. So we've shown a range from 7 to 20%. And the reason I'm saying that it's probably more is, as Mr. Gerhardsen stated in his presentation, this rate is just very administratively burdensome, both for customer and company. On the customer side, what they would have to do is open the door to Otter Tail and have an accounting of the different types of end uses that they have to obtain these credits. For example, cooking, heating, or air conditioning, we'd have to look at nameplate data. So they'd have to open the doors. We'd have to have an accounting system to keep that up and make sure that gets into the rate engine, so to speak, to calculate the rates. One thing that could happen to customers is that they could add load and forget to tell us. And then in that case, they could be missing out on potential credits. Likewise, they could remove equipment. We wouldn't necessarily know, and therefore they would be receiving too much credit. So I hope you can see the complexities that would be involved with finding out if equipment is removed or added in this rate.
Anything further, Mr. Gerhardsen?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Follow up, Mr. Savico. Ms. Bendish.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeff Kotsacko. Any further questions from the commission?
Just a comment, maybe, Judge. Just for the, I appreciate that the answer back. You know, what I'm trying to avoid here is, you know, we go through and we say this is all good, and Buffalo City Grill calls me and they've got a 25% increase in power, and they never even realized it was coming. So that's just a what if.
Thank you.
We have one more witness, Mr. Gerhardsen.
I do. I'll call Bernadine Brutlog.
Last name again, please.
Brutlog, Brutlag.
Ms. Brutlog, as you have heard me advise previous witnesses, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In other words, generally speaking, in North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000 in prison for a period of up to 5 years or more. Please raise your right hand. Being advised regarding perjury, Ms. Brutlog, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Mr. Gerhardsen.
Ms. Brutlog, can you state your job title and give a brief description of what you do at Otter Tail?
I am manager of regulatory services. Within my group is Mr. Python, who works for me. So revenue requirements, pricing, compliance. We also have load research, pretty much everything that has to do with retail regulation is someplace in the area that I manage.
Can you give the commission a brief educational work history and state any certifications you hold, professional certifications?
This is my 25th year with Otter Tail Power Company. I have a bachelor's degree in accounting, and I am an inactive CPA in Minnesota.
And I'd like to turn your attention to the issue of economic development, and maybe you could just give the commission a brief history of our economic development, how we arrived at a certain dollar amount for commitment in the past, and what we've been doing.
I think you'll find this interesting because it wasn't as direct as you may think. In 1989, well, let me back up even further than that. In the years prior to 1989, we had different depreciation rates among the jurisdictions. And that was set in our Minnesota rate case. North Dakota at that time had higher decommissioning costs and shorter service lives, so therefore the depreciation was higher. We thought we were going to have a rate case in North Dakota to get both states on the same basis. We did not. But your staff, as you know, periodically reviews our returns and may say that it would be a good idea if we could have a rate reduction, which we've done a number of times since our last case. In 1989, we negotiated a rate reduction, which was $1,315,557. we gave $1 million back. We reduced base rates by $1 million, and we set up the $315,557 as an economic development amount that we would be, were required. We left it in rates, but we were required to spend that each year. And within that, there was a criteria that I think it was 160. Here, I have to get my cheat sheet out. But there was a certain amount, $160,000 we were to spend approximately on matching grants with the communities. We could spend $100,000 on, at that time we had an external consultant. Later we brought that consultant in-house, and it's now labor. We also help fund loan pools in North Dakota, and if we had losses on those, we had up to $35,000 we could include on loan losses. Now I could say there's been very few of those over the years. And then remaining $20,557 was miscellaneous expense, travel, phones, that kind of thing. So that's how we arrived at the number. It was part of a settlement agreement. And part of that settlement agreement also said that we would do cost-benefit analysis to see whether this was a good thing for both the company and our customers. We did two cost-benefit analyses, as I remember. And what we did is say, there was a lot of judgment involved in those, but we had to look at this and say, how many customers did we retain and for how many years? And so we built in an attrition amount in that. And because, as you know, if we can retain customers, we're spreading our fixed costs over more customers, so it benefits all of our customers, and, of course, it benefits the company. So we did about two of those. We showed that it was probably a break-even situation. I mean, it really was. We were getting the benefit. Our customers were getting the benefit from that. And after the first couple of studies, just the assumption of how many businesses would still be there got pretty problematic. And I don't think we did any more from that. So beyond that, as Mr. Brough said, it is a judgment call. It's soft measures. How many jobs do we retain? How many jobs do we create? How many businesses do we help? How many matching grants do we give out? So it's that kind of thing that we look at. And that's really what we look at, I think, today for our economic development benefits.
He also asked, have you given the commission periodic updates on the progress of the economic development effort?
We have. Once a year, we try to come in and bring Don Fry, who's our economic development person in North Dakota, comes in and talks about who he's been working with, what he's been doing. I think this year we've been a little bit remiss, and maybe he hasn't been here for a while, but we do need to do that, and we give the commission updates periodically.
I have no further questions.
Mr. Savico. Ms. Bendish?
No,
Ms. Jeff Kotzak? No. Questions from the commission?
No.
Thank you very much. It's your last witness, Mr. Gerhardsen.
That is, I have nothing further.
This would be a good time. Let's take a recess of 10 minutes, and we will reconvene at 10 minutes after 3:00.